Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know where I'm at on Tom Brady, Seth, as far as a commentator goes, because I don't get to watch many of the games because we work on Sundays. But I really do enjoy how much TV and radio he's doing because of Fox. Like, he's showing up on all these Fox shows now, and he and Cowherd are really good together. I think Cowherd asks some really good questions.
And he's pretty opinionated when it comes to the actual quarterback position, which isn't something you always get out of really any of the all-time greats. Joe Montana was notoriously unopinionated. Like, when he tried to be a commentator, he didn't want to criticize anybody. He didn't want to say anything. And even Peyton, I think Peyton's very careful about what he says, and you're not going to hear him necessarily roast anybody. I don't know. Now, Tom Brady, he roasts quarterbacks in general, but he hasn't necessarily, that I've seen, roasted individual quarterbacks, but he gets kind of surly talking about kids these days.
No,
he's turned into a grumpy old man.
The closest we saw from Brady roasting anybody was before he even became a commentator, he was still a player, where he was talking about the Raiders not wanting to sign him in free agency. He was talking about that on LeBron's barbershop show there and said, "You're keeping that MF-er?" Talking about Derek Carr. That's the
and
closest.
And it turns out, because we've been able to put all the pieces together, he was talking about Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Basically confirmed by Mark Davis last week on a podcast. Yeah.
So here's Brady. This was an interesting conversation, I thought. Here's Brady with Cowherd. Two cuts coming up here. The first is talking about how beneficial it was for him and how beneficial it's been for others, including Patrick Mahomes, to sit and watch as a young quarterback your first season, two or three, than getting thrown in the fire right away.
Patrick flat out said, I can't thank Alex Smith enough for everything that he did for me. All I did was ask him questions in the meeting room my first year. And I look at my first year, that's all I did with Drew Bledsoe. Aaron Rodgers had 3 years to sit behind Brett Favre. Eli Manning sat behind Kurt Warner. There's a lot of guys, and I'd say a lot of successful players, that weren't kind of thrown into the fire, because what happens is you can lose your confidence so fast, because when the real games are happening and the blitzes are coming and you don't understand protection and you don't understand coverage and you start taking hits and you start throwing interceptions, you begin to lose confidence that, hey, I don't even know how to play football. I don't know how to go down and lead our team to score points. I can't even make and complete a pass.
The part that resonated with me on that one, Seth, and that made me think this would be interesting to listen to on the show, is, and I don't think this has anything to do with the fact that C.J. Stroud didn't get to sit and watch for a couple of years, but I felt like the quarterback he was describing towards the end there was the quarterback that was getting his ass handed to him for 3 or 4 weeks in the middle of last season. And I don't know how much of that has carried over, because there are times that, I mean, you could argue that C.J. Stroud as a quarterback, two seasons and one game in, looked the most comfortable the early to midway part of his rookie year.
Right. Oh, but and it's classic. It's a cliche, and I think people get tired of hearing it, but it's a cliche for a reason. It's that this is why you see so many promising rookie performances. It's that you're kind of ambushing the league, and the league doesn't have enough film on you to really know what makes you uncomfortable. So that whole rookie season kind of becomes an experiment by the league in general at seeing what you can and cannot do, and then they have a full offseason to dissect it, and then, hey, guess what? It gets a lot harder. It gets a lot harder for rookie offensive coordinators as well, because that was the first time Bobby Slowick was going through, everybody really has a good idea of my play-calling tendencies and what I like to do with C.J. Stroud, all of that. So that part of it, there's part of it. Like, for one, there's no correct way to handle a quarterback.
Right.
I think that But when you try to say that there is one way you should handle a quarterback, people that think a starting quarterback should start right away can point to all the different examples of guys who have done it and it's worked out well. The problem is you can't go back in time and take the guys who started right away in bad circumstances and play out like how it would have happened if if it had worked out, if they handled it differently. You know, yeah. I can't go back in time and see what David Carr looks like sitting behind a veteran quarterback
for
a couple of years.
That's right.
Yeah, Philip Rivers got to sit behind Drew Brees.
Yep.
All those scenarios, you just don't know. And I think it's individual and unique. I think that, I mean, last year, the beginning of last year, you remember, or 2 years ago, CJ's rookie year, the thing that I was most nervous about was there were elements of the first year of the franchise existence in 2002 when we had a rookie quarterback and he was starting alongside six other rookies on offense. And there's only so much you can do with something like that. The beginning of CJ's career, you had a rookie offensive coordinator, a rookie center, snapping to a rookie quarterback, and then the center ended up being a hodgepodge of different guys. But like that part of it, I think sometimes people are either a little too cocksure of themselves that like, oh no, people, he'll figure it out, he'll be fine. It's hilarious because pitchers can spend 7 years in the minors, mm-hmm. and like, yeah, because it takes a long time to really develop a pitcher before he's ready for Major League Baseball. But in football, for whatever reason, it's like, oh, you've been in the NFL for 2 weeks now, huh?
Yeah.
There you go. You're a starter.
Yeah.
That's the way it's got
to
be.
Well, I would add to that, Seth, you're kind of pointing out all the newness of CJ's rookie head coach greenlighting the whole thing. You know, like it's D'Amico's decision to delegate all this stuff to all these guys. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
One more from Tom Brady says, sometimes the meeting room is the better place for a young quarterback to learn.
If you're sitting in the meeting room and learning, I actually think that's the best way to learn because you can understand it on the board. You can understand it on the video screen. You can go out to a walkthrough and then you can learn and practice by making a lot of good decisions, bad decisions, without necessarily being critiqued from the outside world and losing, look, you got PFF grading you every week, like you were just referencing there before I came on. They're grading you. And now you go as a first year quarterback, you barely know. And now everyone's telling you suck. And it takes a while to regain your confidence.
Yeah.
You lose your whole fan base. And it's really unfortunate. But that's very much the state of the league. And I think we've dumbed down the game in so many ways to allow for a lesser caliber developed player to get in there and lead an organization.
My only thing with that cut, Seth, is that you can be the starting quarterback of a team and still do all that learning in the meeting room that he's talking
about.
You can still do all those walkthroughs. This isn't something that's exclusive to backup quarterbacks learning in the meeting room and the starting guy is picking his nose in the corner or something. And the other part there, like honestly, if I have a quarterback who is letting PFF grades affect his performance, you've got the wrong quarterback.
Yeah, there's and again with the quarterback position, everything is so unique and individual. I guess the sum total of all the pressure that's on a guy is probably what Brady is talking about there. Yeah. I mean, Brady kind of had the ideal situation was because. As a sixth-round draft pick, you don't have those expectations. And then he gets dropped onto a team that has a strong rushing attack and a really good defense and all of those other things. And there wasn't a lot of pressure on him necessarily. It was a different league. Even though it was 2002 when they won their first Super Bowl, it was a different era in terms of quarterback play where everything, because of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning mostly, everything is geared so much more towards the quarterback being the absolute most important thing on a team. And if you don't have one, you're more likely than not screwed. I think that part of it, Brady probably looks at that and thinks that, yeah, that's just a different environment to operate. He kind of, I don't want to say he was coddled because he wasn't obviously coddled, but he didn't have the same expectations that a lot of the guys do.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September the 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus. All right, final segment coming up. We'll find out what's going on In the Loop. We'll get the weekly Caserio preview of the opponent. Also, did you feel the same way watching last week's YouTube broadcast as one prominent former NFL player did? We will have that for you as well coming up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.